From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
House Speaker Mike Johnson makes his move to pass aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, despite opposition from some on his right flank. What is he proposing? What are its prospects in the House? And could it lead to the loss of his speakership? We'll tell you all about it in this edition of Potomac Watch, as the American House of Representatives heads for what will be one of the most important votes in the current Congress, and maybe in many years. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, Wall Street Journal editorial page editor, here in our daily podcast, Potomac Watch. And I'm here with two of my colleagues, Kate Batchelder Odell and Bill McGurn. Welcome to you both. Kate, big move by the speaker this week, rumored last week, but now he's walking out there and he's put his bona fides and his substance on the line. Tell us what he's proposing.
The Senate passed one aid bill that covered Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Speaker Johnson is talking about passing four separate bills, one each on Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and then a fourth that covers some additional GOP priorities, such as repossessing Russian sovereign assets and banning TikTok. A lot of these bills look somewhat similar to what the Senate passed, but for instance, Ukraine is perhaps attracting the most attention, most controversial among Republicans. That bill is about $60 billion, but $23 billion of that right off the top is just replenishing U.S. weapon stocks. And then the Republicans managed to get in, for instance, some loans on some of the budget support that we give to Ukraine that has attracted a lot of criticism as paying for their government pensions and so on. And then on the Israel bill, that looks similar to the Senate's. It's really a replenishment of some of their weapon stocks, particularly on Iron Dome, their air defense, that they've been using interceptors at a rapid clip to defend against Hamas rockets. That bill needs to pass separately because Democrats are starting to lose support for Israel. And so you need more Republican votes for that one to pass. And then, of course, the one on Taiwan hopefully will pass with the broadest margins. And this is in addition to giving some weapons to Taiwan that really need to be pre-stored on the island. It also invests $3 billion in our own ability to build submarines, which has been just a huge issue. We've been very behind on building our submarines and slow to sell some to the Aussies. But anyway, so all around, this looks similar to the Senate bill, but also includes some notable GOP wins. And I think it's likely to pass.
All three, you mean, are likely to pass?
Yes. Well, they're going to bundle them and send them to the Senate, but I think all four of them will pass on different coalitions and get through.
And then once they bundle it and send it to the Senate, then the Senate will have to have another vote itself, right? And that passed with something like the previous version passed with more than 60 votes. So it's likely to succeed and break a filibuster attempt there, right?
Well, yes, the Senate's version passed with 70 votes and had a bigger margin on the final vote than it did even on starting debate. And there's some real priorities in there, like the submarine money and other things that Senate Republicans are really enthusiastic about. So I would expect that the Senate could handle this quite quickly if Schumer is serious about it and pass it on a filibuster-proof margin.
What's interesting politically about this, well, there are a lot of things, but one is that Speaker Mike Johnson has been heavily criticized by some on his right. It's not a big group on the right, but it's enough of a group led by Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and others, threatening that if he would move ahead like this, they will pull the trigger on a vote to vacate the speakership and require a vote of the House to oust him. And that's in the back here. So it's all the more interesting, and I think to the credit of the speaker, that he's moving ahead here. And let's listen to him make his case for why he's doing what he's doing.
My philosophy is you do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may. If I operated out of fear over a motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job. Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now, a critical time on the world stage. I could make a selfish decision and do something that that's different, but I'm doing here what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing lethal aid to Ukraine right now is critically important. I really do. I really do believe the intel and the briefings that we've gotten that I believe Xi and Vladimir Putin and Iran really are an axis of evil. I think they're in coordination on this. I think that Vladimir Putin would continue to march through Europe if he were allowed. I think he might go to the Balkans next. I think he might have a showdown with Poland or one of our NATO allies. To put it bluntly, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys.
Bill, that's, to my mind, a very good statement in behalf of what he's doing. It seems to me to be done out of conviction. And I think that probably is what angers so many on the right. They had hoped that he would somehow follow them, but he seems to believe that this is the right thing to do. The clip didn't include, but the statement that came after this, which that his one of his sons is going to the Naval Academy in the fall. So he feels this urgent need here and the risks personally, which is interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The fundamental problem he has is that the smaller the House majority, the more it empowers the tiny minority opposing things. And it gives them no positive power, but only power to bring down and destroy. And I think if you're the speaker, and I think the statement indicates that you've done this, you have to decide, what is my speakership going to mean? What am I willing to do for it, not to do? And I don't think he's willing to be effectively blackmailed by a small group of people who say, I'm going to hold up everything and threaten to bring you down if you don't do what I want. So I'm encouraged that he's going ahead. And I would say, you know, this is a very conservative instinct that he has. Remember Reagan? He was a union negotiator. People always forget that. And he always said his strategy is, when he was negotiating at the head of the actors union, was to get most of what you want, and then come back another day for the rest. And we seem to have forgotten that. And we want brave, suicidal stands, you know, where we take a moral stand, but we don't get anything for it. So I applaud the speaker for this. I think he's showing the right way. And if he doesn't get it, I mean, there's part of me that wishes Marjorie Taylor Greene would be speaker and see what she could do with this. From her point of view, it wouldn't be any better. Should have even less success than he would.
Well, first of all, she couldn't get the votes to become speaker.
Right.
But let's assume that Republicans did decide to put her over the top. She couldn't govern. She doesn't have anywhere close
exactly
to a majority of the Republicans.
They're acting as though Johnson is not giving them what they want at a principle rather than a recognition of the votes he has and the votes he doesn't have. It's a slim House majority against the White House and the Senate, controlled by the other party. This also boggles the mind that in the 21st century, the Republicans that stood together for the Cold War and then watched Biden lose Afghanistan are willing to put Ukraine on the chopping block. I don't get it. That probably qualifies me as a rhino today, but I don't get it.
Join that club, Bill. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, more about how this maneuvering will work in the House, a little inside baseball, not too much, and the stakes of this vote when we come back.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal Opinion Page here on Potomac Watch, here with Bill McGurn and Kate Batchelder O'Dell. Kate, let's just do a little bit of the process here as we move ahead. The speaker is going to try to move these four bills that you described through the Rules Committee, which is important because it means that if they do that successfully, it goes to the floor and requires only a majority vote to pass each of them. Now, we mention this because when Kevin McCarthy negotiated his speakership way back when, he put three of the dissenting Republicans, the rump anti-Ukraine Republicans, on the Rules Committee. So what Johnson's going to need, if they oppose it, the rules, is he's going to need Democratic votes on the Rules Committee to get those passed.
Appointing those members onto the Rules Committee really was, I think, the original mistake of this Congress, because it has forced the House to basically function like the Senate and get a higher bar of majority for anything they pass. And the House is a majoritarian institution with no experience in operating that way. So I do think this time, however, you might see these bills get through the Rules Committee. And that would require, like I said, perhaps different coalitions. Traditionally, Democrats aren't going to help Republicans get their bills through rules or vote for rules on the floor. But this time, you do have Democrats who want Ukraine funding. You have Republicans who are willing to move Israel-only funding. And that's what I'm talking about when I mention these kind of different coalitions that might help these bills get through the House and packaged up and sent to the Senate. So I do think you will see some action at the Rules Committee, and it will go better than a lot of these exercises have been going for Republicans for the past year.
All right. So let's assume they get through. How many Republicans are really going to oppose aid to Ukraine now? I mean, obviously, Donald Trump hasn't been helpful here, at least some time ago, saying that he opposed aid, although he supported loans for Ukraine, which we all know would be forgiven, unlikely to be repaid. But he's been relatively quiet of late. Do you think that could help get more Republican votes for this?
He has been quiet, and those who are in his orbit would point out that he also, when the border deal collapsed, that traded the some border changes negotiated in the Senate for Ukraine money, Trump focused his fire on the border provisions and less so on the Ukraine funding. And what those folks will tell you, that means he's not necessarily opposed to Ukraine funding, and he has been quiet so far, as you mentioned. You know, half the conference has voted against Ukraine funding in some form. I think that would be considered a very high watermark. And I think you'll see less than that here pretty substantially. There are perhaps a few dozen who really do sincerely believe that the United States has no interest in Ukraine and that we should completely bail out of there. I think there is another group of Republicans that's larger, that is frustrated with the president's handling of Ukraine and is reading the outrage in the GOP base about Ukraine, who is more persuadable on this issue. And I think there's a chance that Republicans can get over the line of half the conference on the Ukraine bill, which I think would be good for Speaker Johnson and a show of strength for him to not need to rely so heavily on Democrats. And I think that's possible because, one, Ukraine is struggling to hold its defensive positions, and the facts on the ground are deteriorating, and it's starting to focus some Republican minds on the choices here, which are basically to help and get them the weapons or to abandon them. And so that's why I think there's potentially more GOP support for this bill than it might appear at first.
The point you make about facts on the ground in Ukraine are coming into sharper view as the Russian advantage in ammunition has now reached artillery is 5-1, according to the NATO commander, and soon will be 10-1. And air defenses are the other big problem right now because they're running out of interceptors, Ukraine is. And that means Russian glide missiles, which are launched from a standoff distance, cannot be intercepted as readily, and the cities cannot be protected as readily. Infrastructure cannot be protected as it has been for much of this war. And that means it's taking a devastating toll on the Ukrainians. And the real question, Bill, is if aid is denied to Ukraine, could the Russians make a breakthrough here and start to rout the Ukrainians? It's possible. I mean, they're holding up bravely, but we don't know how long that can be.
Look, we've rightly criticized Joe Biden for giving Ukraine enough to continue fighting, but not enough to prevail. He's never said, as far as I know, Ukraine should win. He said that we can't let Putin win, but he's never said, I want victory for Ukraine and so forth. But this case involves, as the situation deteriorates on the ground for the Ukrainians, it invites a comparison. Will the Republicans do to Ukraine what Joe Biden did to Afghanistan? Is he going to pull the support and lose Ukraine? And I think that's a fair critique. And I think that's what Speaker Johnson has on his mind, this friendly country fighting for its life, unfair aggression against an avowed enemy of the United States. It just boggles the mind where we're at. And I hope not only that they pass the aid, but as you suggest, it gets there in time to make a difference. And I think it's going to be harder now because of the delays.
We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in Ukraine and also the implications for Mike Johnson's speakership of the vote on these bills when we come back.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker. Play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kate Batchelder Odell and Bill McGurn. Kate, just a little bit on the stakes here for Ukraine. Talking about what happens if the United States does abandon Ukraine and if Russia then wins in that country and subjugates it to Putin's political control. The stakes include the fact that Russian forces then could be moved all the way to the border of Ukraine and Poland, right up to the edge of Romania, right up to the edge of the rest of NATO. And it makes for a much more difficult ability of NATO to defend its border areas and would require substantially more forward deployments and much more military investment. This is the paradox I think some of these opponents of Ukraine don't understand. A Ukraine defeat doesn't save money. It costs more.
Right. I mean, there is this odd delusion in Washington among Ukraine's critics that if they pass on the aid bill and just ignore it, that they can go back to fighting about the border or their own domestic politics. I think that's just completely fanciful. I think, too, it's quite obvious that Putin intends to subdue the entire country. He's not going to be satisfied with some new carve out in the east. And that's been clear since he rolled into Kiev 2 years ago. And so, to your point, he would have just huge gains along NATO's border. And it would require NATO to defend all of that border. It would require us to deploy a lot more assets to NATO's Eastern Front and spread those assets really thin across just a much larger ground of territory. And so this is worth underscoring as we talk about, well, the U.S. needs to focus more on Asia. Well, if Ukraine collapses, the United States is going to have substantially more expense and headache in Europe, and it will have fewer, not more, assets to put in Asia. So I think that's also a really important point to consider. If you want the United States to have fewer commitments in Europe, you want Ukraine to win and emerge as the strongest Eastern European military that exists.
Well, let's move back to the U.S. House of Representatives. Let's assume here, for the sake of argument, that the Speaker succeeds, these bills pass in some substantial form, make it to the Senate, they become law, President Biden signs it. House and Senate will then go on recess, but Marjorie Taylor Greene and now Thomas Massie of Kentucky have threatened that if this happens, they will trigger a motion to vacate the speakership, probably after the recess, if they follow through. And there would be a vote again to depose a second speaker during this Congress after they successfully tossed Kevin McCarthy. Now, the difference this time is that some Democrats are saying, we will support the speaker against this effort to oust him. Tom Suozzi, New York congressman, Democrat, has already said he'll vote for Johnson, and he's urged his colleagues to do so, too. It isn't clear where Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, stands, but I think there'll be a substantial bill support among Democrats, I would guess, to vote for Johnson or to just stay away from the chamber so fewer Republican votes are needed to be able to keep him in his job, given that Johnson will have taken this political risk and done what he thinks is right for the country.
Yeah, if Johnson prevails in that, he'll be stronger than he was going into this. I mean, what surprises me is that anyone would want to be speaker today. Really, there's no reward for doing the right thing, for being tough. I think he's played it right. You have to stake out a principle and back it, even if it costs you your job. I don't know, but I wonder if this is really an empty threat, because I'm not sure there's a lot of support for Marjorie Taylor Greene on this one. So I think they learned last time they were kind of ostracized, the people that brought down McCarthy. From their own point of view, it doesn't lead to better outcomes. So it'd just be vengeance, and it would just communicate a Republican Party in chaos.
Kate, you have your ear to the ground of the members of Congress here and Republicans. What do you think? Is this a phony threat or one that could possibly, if it fails, leave Johnson stronger?
Well, that's the risk that I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene would be taking, is that if you don't succeed and you have a big humiliation, what have you accomplished? I think Bill's exactly right that the job is not worth having from Mike Johnson's perspective if he's really just riding sidecar to whatever Marjorie Greene says that Congress can do on any given day. So I think his attitude is completely right, that the only thing for him to do is to stare down the critics and say, it's your choice if you want to bring that. And I think that calculation is going to be harder than it was with Kevin McCarthy. There were all sorts of personal grievances about Kevin McCarthy that I think were unfair, but motivated more members than currently exist now. I mean, Mike Johnson has dedicated his life to being a constitutional lawyer defending Christians who oppose gay marriage and other unpopular stances. I mean, he's not someone who's easy to portray as a corrupt swamp sellout. I think it will be harder. And I think even members like Thomas Massie, who is thinking about going along with Marjorie Greene, has to think long and hard about whether his incentives are aligned with her. So I don't know that the threat is completely phony. It is real, but I think there's a real chance that Johnson is rewarded for showing conviction, like we said, and backbone, and does emerge from this with his job.
All right, we'll leave it there for today. It's going to be fun to watch this momentous debate going forward the next 72 hours. Looks like Saturday will be the day for the crucial votes in the House, assuming they move through the Rules Committee. We shall see how it goes. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Kate and Bill. We're here every day on Potomac Watch, and we hope you're right with us tomorrow. Thank you.